Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight-up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Episode 58, yes, I'm loving it. Network is getting bigger and more serious. Thanks, guys, for listening again. If it wasn't for you listening, the show wouldn't be anything, so thank you again. And the book, Hong Kong Business Supercharged. It's been an amazing first week, learning a lot, listening to people, and getting tons of feedback. I haven't pushed it too much besides this podcast and some email, but I'm excited to get some people buying it and giving me feedback and saying it's helped them already. They're getting through it and learning tons, so thanks so much. Mike, one specifically I'm thinking about is Mike the Greek. He's a good friend I met in Shanghai. He's been listening to this podcast and bought the book. It's been great. Thank you, Mike. And he says he's loving the podcast and the book has been amazing so far. So thank you again. It really motivates me to keep on podcasting, blogging, writing. So thank you, Mike the Greek, and everybody else. We got another iTunes review, total of 10. Thank you guys for going into iTunes, figuring out how to do it and leaving a review. I know it takes some effort, so I really appreciate it. Let me read one off here. Mike has a ton of connections and resources in and around Hong Kong, and it's awesome that he takes the time to share their knowledge with us through this podcast. Lars from USA. Thank you, Lars. Thanks for the feedback. And yeah, I love making connections. I love meeting people, and I love getting them on here and sharing. So it's been a couple of crazy weeks, you know, the book launch, and also finalized an acquisition I've been working on for a while for my Hong Kong startup, Social Agent Limited. Don't want to try to jam it all into this introduction before we get into the interview, so I'm going to put it after the show. Also, you know, I think that I've been having fun sharing news and insights. Also, I put a funny picture of the week in a weekly newsletter people seem to enjoy. So if you want to get on my newsletter, check it out at globalfromasia.com/subscribe. Okay, now for this week's show, we have Frank Lavin, who's the founder and CEO of Export Now, a company helping Western brands get into the Chinese e-commerce market. He shares with us the thought process and steps you need to take as a company looking to get into the Chinese internet and e-commerce and market overall. So let's listen in. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have a good friend of mine and CEO of Export Now, Frank Lavin. Thanks for being on the show, Frank.
Michael, good to be with you.
Yes, yes. It's been on my list to have you on the show when we're making it happen, so I'm really happy to have you here. And can you quickly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I've been in Asia for most of the last 18 years, mainly between Hong Kong and Singapore. About half of my work out here has been business, and about half of my work has been government. The business side, banking with Citibank and Bank of America, communications and public affairs with Edelman, and in government, I served as U.S. Undersecretary of Commerce in Washington, D.C., and I also served as U.S. Ambassador to Singapore.
Great. Yeah, we've met a couple of times, and you've always share a lot of, you mentor me a lot, so it's appreciated, and I'm glad you're sharing your story and some tips for listeners. So I think we're going to focus on the China side today. Mm-hmm. And importing and your business Export Now. It's been 4 years now, or five?
Yeah, we're going into our fifth year pretty soon. We've been 4 years. All we do is e-commerce in China, Michael. And so actually for that particular segment of the market, if you're 4 years old, you're 5 years old in China, you're well in the top tier in terms of longevity and experience in China e-commerce.
Yes, definitely. I mean, usually I think the two-year mark is maybe, you're people have made it long enough. Usually, I think always 2 years is a breaking point with a lot of businesses I've seen. And four or five is, yeah, you're definitely well established. And I'm happy to hear that. So maybe just give an introduction for those that aren't familiar.
Sure. What Export Now does is we operate e-commerce stores in China for foreign brands or foreign merchants. So that and it's B2C, it's only consumer products. But what this means is any consumer product brand around the world, any manufacturer around the world, can just call us up and we'll take care of all of the support activities and operate the e-commerce store itself. And that means, Michael, we'll do inbound logistics, bring it into market. We'll do regulatory approval and testing and labeling so it can legally be sold and imported in the country. We'll run the store. We'll actually put up the web page and capture the transaction and do the pick, pack, and ship. We have the warehouse operation. We have our own warehouses. we'll do all of the customer contact work, CRM work and so forth, digital media, receipt funds. We'll do the financial settlement, and then we'll remit back to you wherever you might be, whatever currency you want. So you can sit in San Francisco or Australia or Paris, and you can run your China e-commerce store.
Sounds like a dream come true to a lot of people I talk to. So,
well, it's interesting. It's really kind of shifted China from being a very challenging market for consumer brands to being one of the more open markets that e-commerce has made in terms of cost effectiveness. China is one of the better opportunities for brands in terms of market entry.
Definitely. I'm thinking a lot. I remember even when I was in the West, it was on the news. Now I'm sure China's everywhere, you know, in America and everywhere about, you know, the size of the market and the opportunities. So it's a great chance. And yeah, I do agree. Yeah, social media and e-commerce in China have definitely been kind of like making it a lot easier and more streamlined for businesses and to take
advantage. Sure. What we're seeing, Michael, at work here are two laws that sort of govern business decision making. One, you just touched on the law of large numbers, which is to say, if you've got something that works in your home market, the population base and the size of the economy is so big in China that to some extent you're likely to see some kind of responsiveness from the market. So that law of large numbers is very important when thinking about China. You might not get the same penetration. So Starbucks doesn't see the same kind of per capita coffee consumption in China that it sees in the United States. It's a developing market and so forth. But China, nonetheless, is the second largest market in the world for Starbucks. So the first law is the law of large numbers. The second law is the law of convergence. And the law of convergence holds that as people around the world reach certain levels of affluence and education, as they sort of move into that developed space, their tastes tend to converge. So if you've got a premium consumer brand like Nike, you'll find a consumer in China of the same income level and the same education level as the U.S. home market will have that same preference for Nike. So what we're really saying is China matures economically, and as the consuming population becomes more and more affluent, that their appetite for great international brands, the premium brands, lifestyle brands, and especially luxury brands, continues to outperform. No surprise there. So you put both those laws together, and it really points you to an e-commerce solution.
Got it. Yeah, it's true. A lot of times people think China and America are so different, but there's actually a lot of similarities, like you're saying, the middle class.
I think what we're saying is, look, there certainly are differences, but with the strata of the population, there's a lot of similarities. So AIM, if you're coming in from offshore, you're going to at least start your discussion in China with that segment of the consumer market that is the most similar to your home market.
Yep, that's great. I'm also really happy that's happening just for me as an American here. So let's maybe talk about some of the typical companies that you work with, or maybe so. Is it SMEs, MNCs, or, you know, small businesses, or large? Or
well, there's a range, and we're client driven, of course. I mean, we talk to folks, and they decide they want to go ahead with China e-commerce. So, meaning we act as the agent. We're not a distributor, right? So the companies hire us, so to speak, to put their companies and run the e-commerce online. But we'll work with some larger companies, such as Micron, one of the largest chip makers in the world. Their consumer brand is Crucial. We run the Crucial e-commerce store in China. The U.S. National Football League is one of the largest sports organizations in the world. We run the official NFL store in China. And we'll work with some wonderful boutique brands, too. There's a wonderful smaller brand by the name of Little Giraffe, and it makes baby material, baby gear, and so forth. But it's fabulous products, but we're very happy working with them. So we work now with about 50 brands. Some of the names we can't disclose. We have a privacy agreement with the client, and so we're quietly helping them out, but we can't talk about them. But others we're very comfortable talking about.
Great. I got it. I wonder what your feedback is about smaller brands, maybe, or they have a little bit of a following in say the U.S. or their home country, and they're interested to come to China. I mean, I think brand is pretty important, brand awareness in China. What are your...
The strength of the brand really drives consumer behavior. And it doesn't mean you have to be big, but it does mean there has to be something about your product, your brand. It has to be highly differentiated. There has to be some special reason why the Chinese consumer might make an effort to find your product or pay a premium for your product. So, and look, smaller brands have that attribute at times. Larger brands might be more likely to have it. But we have to have a discussion with the company as we're onboarding them about what is the value proposition and what is the likely prospect of success. Well, one reference point is this, as I mentioned a minute ago with Starbucks, a foreign brand is unlikely to outperform in China its home market success. So what you're likely to, at least in initial years, sort of launch phase, only reach a percentage of your home market success. So one of the important onboarding questions is, tell us what you're currently doing in e-commerce in your home market, because what's going to happen in China is likely to be sort of a subset of those results. Right, so we all have to be comfortable with that's where we're going to end up.
True, that makes sense. I think, and there's a lot of times even Chinese like buying, they'll buy off of their websites overseas. So maybe if they're seeing that happening, where they're buying off the U.S. e-commerce website to China, that might be another indicator too. Maybe.
Sure, and also with companies that are taking a long-term view, they're saying we're not necessarily focused on the actual revenue through an e-commerce store for the first year or two. What we're trying to do is introduce our products to market. We're trying to engage consumers, start a discussion, and it's part of national brand positioning is simply to have that e-commerce store. Because as you know, Michael, the typical Chinese consumer wants to see the product online, even if they're purchasing it offline. They want to look at information online. They want to be able to look at a video or understand the history of the company. So the online activity might be part of communication strategy as much as a revenue strategy.
Clear. So let's dig into your model a little bit. So I think I might know the answer, but I just want to maybe clarify. So is it you have one shop? Is it Tmall? And then there's also sometimes flagship shops for...
Sure. Well, what we do, Michael, is come up with a customized solution for each client. And so this comes out of a conversation, and it's a sort of a strategic planning exercise with the client about what are they trying to do with regards to e-commerce in China, and then what would the best mechanical solution be for this particular product or this particular brand. Usually it's a flagship store, sometimes it's multiple stores in a flagship e-commerce store. I mean, sometimes it's multiple stores. Some companies, though, want to emphasize flash sales or group sales. So every company has a slight difference in strategy. But I can say this, the largest platform in China is the Alibaba platform, Tmall. Most brands begin the China activity with some kind of a flagship store on Tmall, right? So that's a very typical starting point for the foreign brands in China.
True, it's amazing, and also kind of leads into my next question. But usually they have to be the actual brand themselves, the owner of the brand. So I know there's some listeners that are maybe younger entrepreneurs that are, I'd say, opportunists or, you know, hustling entrepreneurs trying to make something happen, and maybe it's not their brand, but they're maybe a trader. Is there chances for them? Or
but you're right, Michael. It can either be the brand owner or authorized agent. It's not unusual, particularly say in processed foods, for a food manufacturer to say, look, you can be my China distributor. You are the authorized brand owner, so to speak, a brand user for China. So it has to be someone who's authorized in that chain, right? It can't just be someone who goes into the Costco with a duffel bag and fills a bars of food and then takes the duffel bag to China and sells it, right? I mean, somebody might do that, but that's not what we do.
True. I understand. And also, I don't think Tmall, which is, like you just said, the biggest operator.
Right. You can't do it on Tmall. Tmall, there's no gray market activity on Tmall, but there are other places where you can take gray market goods. But in any event, as you point out, that's not what we do. We want to work directly with the brand owner or authorized agent. And look, that's the party that's going to have the commitment to a long-term build of the brand. That's a good partner for us because we can talk about what's the ad campaign, what's the marketing message, how do we do a launch strategy. And we're going to be in China forever, and we're going to be building sales forever, and we want to work with a good on-the-ground team so we can all grow together.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to help the brand too grow, and in China as well as globally. I think as Chinese continue to like travel and settle overseas, it can help them too.
Right, absolutely.
So maybe the challenges, and you've done a great job, and your business has been flourishing for the last 5 years now. How about some of the clients or maybe potential clients that you've talked to, what's some of the biggest challenges you've noticed?
Well, this has changed a lot in the few years we've been in business. But if you go back a few years ago, I think you had very limited awareness in the U.S. or in the West regarding the size of China's e-commerce market. This year, with the Alibaba IPO and all of the news surrounding that, I think there's enormous jump in that kind of awareness. So most American businesses now realize the China e-commerce market is larger than the U.S. e-commerce market, and they realize how powerful that Alibaba machine is, that and the range of successful foreign companies from Samsung to Apple to Disney to Johnny Walker, that if you're in the consumer space, that Tmall can really be a locomotive for your growth in China. And that part of the discussion, I think, took a few years to sort of mature, but most companies, I think, have an awareness of it at this point.
Got it. How about some tips? You know, maybe somebody's not yet gotten on board in China and they have their own product that's never been officially sold in China, so they may be overwhelmed with what to do.
Sure. Let me mention one or two things on that. One, just remember, this isn't a China point, but it's a new market point. Whenever you go to a brand new market, remember that all of the goodwill you built in your home market through 100 years of activity, the employees know you, the suppliers know you, the community knows you, the trade publications know you. There's all of this awareness of your company, your product, your the way you do business. All of that's washed out. So you really have to heavy up. You have to disproportionately heavy up your communication strategy, whether it's a digital or other kind of mechanisms, but you're introducing yourself to the consumer all over again. You're courting that consumer in a way for the very first time, and it can mystify foreign companies coming into China when they're dominant in their home market in a segment. They've been dominant for 100 years. They show up in China, nobody knows who they are. So you really need a communication strategy and a launch strategy. That's my first point. My second point is think about social media. Think about digital media, because the world is moving toward digital communication, whether it's advertising, whether it's blogs, whether it's social platforms, Twitter, and so forth. But China is outpacing the world. The Chinese consumer is more likely to live in that digital space than the foreign consumer. So you need a social media strategy in China. You need to be able to connect through the local variants of Twitter and Facebook and your webpage and your videos and so forth. That's typically how the consumer is going to develop an opinion of your brand.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you here. And it's, like you said, it's overwhelming for these, like, yeah, even 100 years they've been in America with their fairly established brand. Nobody knows who they are here. And it's almost, I think maybe Americans have, I think, you know, as an American myself, you know, sometimes a little bit too proud, and they don't want to maybe feel like they should start from ground zero. But I think that they should accept that's what's going to maybe happen when they come to China. So it's interesting. And we touched on it with your last answer, but so the marketing in a Chinese marketplace such as Tmall, is there budgets or is there extra efforts that they should put in besides creating a shop?
Well, you need to start with resources and a strategy. Well, to put it another way, distribution is not marketing. So we've been talking up now about distribution. How do I get the product into market? How do I legally import it and get it approved, get it tested, get it labeled, get in the warehouse, get it up on Tmall, go through that whole process? And look, that's a series of somewhat complicated steps that we work on with you. So but some people say, well, now I'm at the finish line. I'm up on Tmall. My comment is, no, you're just at the starting line. Now you've solved the distribution problem, so to speak, but now we have to think about marketing, and we have to start that communication with the consumer. We have to start that conversation. Why should the consumer respect your brand? And you, because if you're the foreign manufacturer, you're typically a bit more expensive than the local competition. So, but the consumers are willing to do that. Well, consumers are willing to pay for a more expensive competition in part, but you have to explain to them why. You have to have that conversation, right? So we need a strategy behind that. We need a budget behind it. We need to think of our themes and our messaging, and then we get into specific tactics. Are we doing SEO, SEM, social media, word search activity? Are we going to do a launch event? Are we going to work with key bloggers? Are we going to do a fashion show? So there's a lot of questions that have to be asked. What we try to do is, in our conversation with the client, is let's talk about what works the most effectively in your home market. So if you're a U.S. company, we'd say let's talk about what you do in social media in the U.S. Which social media platforms are you on? How many times do you put out a tweet in a week? And what are your main themes of your Twitter podcasts? And so then let's adapt that, probably scale it down, but let's adapt that for the China market. Right. So it's that kind of a discussion that I think that allows a brand to be successful.
Yeah. And again, like everything in China, there's similarities, but it's all the platforms are pretty much different and have a little bit of their own rules and ways to grow it. So they have to probably be a little bit flexible, too, with their content strategy.
Absolutely right. But our view is, look, you've got to get in the game. You'll improve in the game as you go along. And it's a learning exercise. So we say get in the market, grow, plan on growing incrementally, but your effectiveness and your reach is going to move up as you go along.
Got it. Okay, I think that was a really good insights for people. And so I know we're talking about I love the online world too, but for as far as like physical office or location for their business, if they were to be in China, what would you suggest or what are your...
It depends on the business model and who they're trying to reach. I think Shanghai is very much the main consumer center, the main commercial center of the country. But that southern China area that flanking Hong Kong has enormous advantages for international business as well, because you have Hong Kong on one side of the border, you have Shenzhen on the other. So that's very attractive. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of tech-related companies, IT companies of the Beijing area, because that's where sort of a cluster of the startup and the VC world is. So I think it really depends on what your business model is, where to locate your company.
True, and I think a lot of listeners that haven't been to China have no idea, but those are pretty far away from each other, at least like two or three hour flight each.
Those are pretty far. And look, yeah. what we hear from folks with whom we work, Michael, is this is one of the great advantages of e-commerce, because e-commerce gives you a national footprint instantaneously. And you don't have to think through, well, what city should I be in, Pittsburgh, or should I be in Dallas? You don't have to have that discussion because you're online and you're covering the whole country. And after a while, you get a sense of your consumer base and your appeal, and then you can make offline decisions from your online data.
Yep, that's definitely a smarter way before you make, bigger investments to use the internet. The power of the internet is great. So I feel like I should have asked this earlier, but you mentioned focusing on B2C sales. Is there opportunities for B2B from like these online?
I'll tell you something, and this we've kind of come across this over the past year or two somewhat inadvertently, but we've seen a real nice relationship between what we're doing in the B2C space and in the B2B space. And what happened was, one of the processed food companies we work with, they have offline distribution, right? And we help them then with online sales. But what happened is that when they go offline and talk to the grocery stores and the distributors about, can you carry more products? Can you carry some of the maybe products that aren't quite as popular yet in China as they might be in the U.S.? Not surprisingly, the response from the offline fellows is, look, we can really only stock the fastest moving products, the most popular products we can. We just don't have the shelf space and the inventory capacity to carry a broad range of products. And you say, all right, I understand that. We're going to put it online and sell that online. Well, as soon as it goes online, what happens is some of those guys call back and they say, hey, I see you now brought that product to market. You're now selling it online. We can stock it. Don't just put it online, but give it to us. So the point is, the online activity is a mechanism for nudging some of the offline activity. It sets the benchmark, it sets the pace, it defines the brand. And once you start messaging and marketing it, well, our guess is the fellow offline was stocking, 8 or 10 products, and somebody walked in the store and said, well, where's product number 11? I saw it online, I want to buy. So after the third or fourth consumer asks that, you say, look, I better stock it. So the point is, it really helps stimulate your offline activity as well.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I think it also builds credibility in the marketplace, and they can see it, and like you said, it gives them good market research too.
Absolutely. With that offline distribution, there's a little bit of chicken and egg that we can all understand, meaning the actual retailer only wants to stock winners, but the trouble is, how do you create a winner if you're new to market? So, well, the e-commerce side of that can do that. So the e-commerce can start building demand, building awareness, and it allows the offline person to feel more comfortable now about carrying the goods.
Definitely. Great strategy. I'm sure people should be taking a lot of notes from this. And payment. So you said they can, you know, sit back in San Francisco, Australia, or their home office, home country. Maybe you can give some insights on on that.
Sure. Well, what's very important for the client, and I think even more so when they're offshore, is that kind of transparency and accountability. Because remember, they're hiring you not just to execute on their behalf, not just to put up the store and sell the goods. That's, of course, the stated reason. But the other point is they've got to trust you. They're putting all of the governance issues and accountability issues in your hands as well, because they might be thousands of miles away. So to be able to show them what you're doing and give them sort of real-time data is enormously comforting to them that we're good partners. So one thing we do is we provide each client with a portal so that client can wake up every morning, just the way they might check their U.S. e-commerce site, wake up every morning and say, I sold 200 units of product X. They can then go to the China e-commerce site on our portal and say, oh, I sold 80 more units in China. And they'll understand what their cash position is. They'll understand what their inventory position is. They've given us standing orders on remittances and so forth. Some people might want a remittance every day. Some people might say every week. Some people might say, well, when it gets above 10,000 renminbi, we want it converted to our currency and swept out. Some people say just keep renminbi because we have a local bank account and just sweep it to our account. So everybody's got a standard algorithm, a standard approach to that, and we just do what they want. But giving them the portal gives them transparency into our, you know, visibility into our system and allows them to see what's going on. We'll get payment directly from the Chinese consumer, the ultimate consumer. And if it's on a platform like Tmall, it goes through the Tmall architecture to release to us. But it's we're very pleased with that platform. It's a high integrity platform. We've been on it now for years, and it just works. It protects the consumer, it protects the merchant, and there's no surprise why Jack Ma has done so well with it.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it's worth their recent big news, and it's great that you guys have really help make that doorway for a lot of people. So also, I always like to kind of talk about, you know, the podcast is a little bit more focused in Hong Kong, but we love going into China with people, what you're providing. Is there any advantages for them to have a Chinese company or Hong Kong company to work with you, or?
Sure. Look, every company's got a different architecture or a different appetite for China, a different strategy for Asia. So what we try to do, we'll of course offer advice or insight, but what you're really trying to do is to say, given your strategy, this is our recommendation, right? And we could also add, look, we think you might be better off if you do it this way, but every company has their own approach. So the point is this, some companies already have some kind of Asia architecture in place, and that will typically be Hong Kong, where they might have a finance office, they might have a regional CFO, they might have a regional treasury operation in Hong Kong, they might have regional logistics run out of Hong Kong, or regional HR run out of Hong Kong. So they typically have some kind of regional apparatus already in play in Hong Kong, and we can work very well with them. A lot of U.S. companies do sourcing out of China, and they'll run that out of Hong Kong as well. So there's, you know, the key for us is to plug in with the company's decision maker, regardless of where it is. But as you indicate, a fair amount of these decision makers are in Hong Kong.
Of course, I'm happy to hear that. And I agree. I personally like to use Hong Kong for most of my own small business. So I'm sure people are curious about some of your costs. I know it seems like you have kind of a custom package for each client, but maybe some listeners interested, could you give some examples?
Think of three or four buckets of costs. And you're right, it's customized. Every company's different, so it's going to be adjusted. But there's sort of three or four common elements. One is setup costs, that you've got to pay Tmall fees. You might have trademark and registration fees. There's going to be web design fees. There's going to be warehouse storage fees. There might be testing and labeling requirements. So everybody's going to be different. There could be, if you have photographs from your U.S. webpage and we can use them, then that saves money. But if not, photos have to be reshot and so forth. But Tmall fees can add up as well, and deposits. So setting up your store from nothing, you just call me up from America today and you say, I manufacture tennis rackets and I want to sell them online in China. Just getting that store up and running and all the things we talked about will cost probably between $50,000 and $100,000 U.S. to say, for about that kind of money, we can replicate in China your home market U.S. webpage, right? And we'll bring the product in. We'll have the warehouse. We'll have the storage space. We'll train the CRM teams. All of that work is 50 to 100. That's the setup. That's one bucket of setup.
Okay.
A second bucket you need to think about is inventory, because that inventory has got to be in market, right? So that comes to the company. You have to have that inventory there. Now, that's not any different than if that U.S. company said, I'm going to now open up a store in Los Angeles, to say, fine, you have to get inventory to Los Angeles to open up that store. So it's a principle most companies understand, but there is at least an indirect cost associated with getting that inventory.
Definitely.
A third charge then is our fee. We don't really make money off of setup, because that's just done at cost to get you online as soon as possible. But our fees come with a revenue share model, where it can be a monthly minimum and then a fee, usually a 15 to 20% of gross sales, right? So you're paying us, you're paying Export Now, some kind of ongoing fee for per sale. And the good news there is, look, our interests are completely aligned. If you're selling well, you're happy to pay someone because the numbers are going pretty well. And if it's selling slowly, you don't have to pay anybody, right? So it's a good fit between the two sides. And the fourth bucket, what we talked on a few minutes ago, is you need some kind of marketing or advertising or communications budget to tell your story.
Clear. Thank you for breaking that up for us. And also, we didn't talk about it too much, but I've gotten your book, and actually you signed it for me, so thank you for that. And I remember that when we first met.
Sure.
I'm also an aspiring author, still almost finished my own book. And maybe you can just share a little bit about those interested in giving your book a read.
Sure. Very happy to, Michael. Thanks. The book, by the way, has the same name as the company. It's Export Now, but it's a slightly different focus than the company, because as we've been talking, the company really just talks about China e-commerce and how to be successful in that particular space. The book is more about new market entry strategy for any company in any market, and it came out of my work in the Commerce Department, Michael, where I was undersecretary, and I could see that there were a lot of companies that were pretty mature in their home market and realized they had to go abroad, but they didn't have a sense of even how to pick a country to go to, how to get started with analysis, how to come up with a strategy. So it's really a cookbook, you could say, for companies that are saying, look, we know we have to globalize, we know we have to go international, but we just don't have, we're not Nike, we're not Procter & Gamble, we don't have that team that can do it for us. So we've got to think through this ourselves. So it's a how-to book for how a company can enter a new market.
Great. And I recommend anybody out there to give that one a read. Maybe that could be the first. I always like to kind of end, we're getting towards the end here, and I always like to ask, you know, if listeners today want to get started into China and they don't know where to get started, maybe probably reading your book would be a good one. But
well, the book's not a bad place to start. I think it's just a general consciousness raiser to say, look, we know we've got to think about foreign markets out there, but we've never really done it. So what steps do we have to take just to be successful? Could be, I mean, our market might be Mexico, it might be France, but we've got to think through these steps. And how do we reduce the risks and the cost of new market entry, get the prospect up? Well, and that's actually the comics for now, because what the company really does is reduce the risks and the costs, right? If you're saying we're going to go online, it's not terribly expensive. And if you say we're going to do it in the largest e-commerce market in the world, your prospect for success has gone up considerably. So no one can promise success in a market, but as you take the cost down, the likelihood you're going to come up with a happy solution continues to grow.
Got it. Great. So I think that's all I have for now. And
Michael, this has been great. I really enjoyed the discussion.
Yeah, it's really fun.
For questions. We love, as you can tell, we get excited about China e-commerce.
We like
talking about it, but it's what we, you know, want to do for a living, right? So
sure.
So I'm very grateful you called up.
No problem. I just like to maybe add in, like, your contact, how you want people to reach out for you or your business.
Sure. Yeah, send me a note. Absolutely. The best way would be just an email. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn is a good way to reach me.
Okay. I could add your LinkedIn on the notes.
Yeah, add the LinkedIn to Frank Lavin, based in Hong Kong, and very happy to hear from people.
Okay, great. And then your website's just exportnow.com for those that want to check out your service. Great.
And the book is Export Now at Amazon and other fine outlets.
Great. I'll link that too in the show notes. Thanks so much, Frank.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, that was fun. Thank you, Frank, for sharing so openly about your business developments over the years. For me, it's comforting to hear that, you know, even business experts like Frank, it takes years to kind of tweak and find the right model, and he's listening to the market, listening to his clients, and finding that right market product fit. So thanks for sharing again, and I hope listeners can support Frank with maybe his book or talking about his services. He's a legit guy. He's helped me a lot with feedback while I've been writing this book, as well as he gave me an autographed copy of his book, Export Now, which I have on the shelf right next to me as I record this. So thanks again, Frank. All right, and now, like I said at the beginning, I wanted to give a little bit of update about my own business startup, Social Agent Limited. Some listeners might have heard me mention it on some shows and also heard that I've been like kind of hustling around for consulting projects over the past couple of months, one of them being this company, Unchained Apps, which is also known as Gigabud. They kind of have a branding thing here, a couple different brands. So they manage a whole bunch of different apps, mobile apps, and I've been coming on there, helping them out with some marketing and talking about Social Agent. So they have mostly mobile app developers and product managers. They don't have marketing and salespeople, where most of the people in Social Agent, of course me, but also our other team, is more heavy on the sales and marketing side, and we're like pretty much online based. So it seems like a pretty good synergy. I've gotten to know them over the past couple months, and they're going to help develop Social Agent more with their development team, and we're going to kind of synergize, and they have a pretty amazing extensive portfolio of different mobile apps that it's going to be fun to market. So just want to give you guys an update. I also wrote a blog post for people like learning what they should think about when they consider selling, transferring a company. It's on the blog at globalfromasia.com/sellinghkco. So it's not really just about Social Agent, actually. It's more about just generally what you should consider for yourself, so maybe you can learn, and I'd love your feedback. Any other feedback about that deal, or about business, or Hong Kong, or podcasts, or anything, always just shoot me a note at mike@globalfromasia.com. All right, guys, see you next week. Peace.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.